Chapter 13. Sarah arrived at the sword polisher's a half hour early. She'd decided to take the bike and stash it in his workshop. Earlier, she'd cased the alley and discovered that she could bring the bike in through a back door. She left the bike at the head of his stairs, chained to the railing. That was only temporary. Left there, the bike would be picked clean, leaving nothing behind but one wheel, sans tire. The door chimed pleasantly as she came in. Copkind emerged from the hall wearing athletic shorts and an old kendo t-shirt, face flushed. He beamed with pleasure as Sarah shook her auburn hair free of helmet head.
Hi.
Sorry I'm early, I decided to bring my bike.
You ride a bike? You mean a motorcycle?
Yup.
Can I stash it in your workshop?
It's not very big.
Of course.
Bring it around to the alley and I'll unlock the gate. Sarah left her helmet on the counter, went back outside, unchained her bike, pushed it over the curb and thumbed the engine. Passing a Harley guy going the other way, she gave the sign and he responded. She zipped halfway up the block, down the tight little alley made even tighter by the de rigueur illegally parked trucks until she came to the concrete wall directly behind Copkind's shop. Copkind stood with his back against the open steel door as she rolled the bike in without getting off. Inside was a common area serving the Feldstein Gallery and the apartments above. She wheeled the bike through another steel door propped open with a hard rubber wedge into the back of Copkind's shop. It was a crowded area with racks of swords on the walls, some bare blades, some mounted, and some in rich silk brocade sword bags. A series of locked steel cabinets lined the wall. In the center of the room was a peculiar installation resembling two miniature sawhorses fitted together to form a platform. It was made of sturdy redwood, and cross-braced, with its legs splayed outward for maximum support. A rectangular gray stone was clamped in place on a slanting board facing a bucket of water. A modified balance chair, one of those Swedish devices on which you sat on your thighs and knees, faced the apparatus.
It's a bit unconventional, David explained. In fact, my old instructor nearly seized a piston when he saw it.
You know can do this, he said. Must use traditional todai and shogi. The traditional method is a bit more cramped. I tried it for a while, but it led to back problems.
This is better. What do you do here?
I'll show you. Copkind waited until she had parked her bike in the corner and taken off her jacket. He knelt on the stool, picking up a long, curving piece of steel that lay on the table next to him. The piece of steel was sheathed in tightly wrapped newspaper. Unsheathing the blade, Copkind reached into the bucket, doused the clamped stone with water, and began to run the blade back and forth over the wetted stone. This is a synthetic stone, made of chromium oxide. It's okay for the coarse stuff, but when we get down to fine quality, only natural polishing stones from Japan will do. With an almost reverent expression, Copkind ran the blade along the stone, creating an oddly soothing sound. Swoosh. Swoosh. Sarah was mesmerized. For a while, both were lost in the sounds of the blade sliding over the stone. The polisher shook himself as if coming out of a daze and grinned.
Sorry.
It's extremely therapeutic, once you get into it. Doesn't it kill your back?
Not if you do it right.
And I have all sorts of ways to relax. One of which is to go to a party with a beautiful woman. Sarah grinned in spite of herself.
Copkind blushed, surprised by his own effrontery.
I'll just go out front and get my things, she said.
Have you got some place I can change?
Leading her down a hall with doors to what she presumed were his private quarters, Copkind showed her to a large combo bath/utility room with a mahogany hot tub mounted on a platform in the corner. There was a clothes washer and dryer, a large shower and a cabinet filled with fluffy towels.
Don't worry, I have a sink in the shop.
Take your time. Sarah had brought the little black dress by Dolce & Gabbana, and a pair of black satin low risers. Her cunning little beaded black purse barely contained her .25 caliber Beretta and badge. The .25 was barely even a gun, but fashion demanded that she leave the .357 at home. The witchblade had assumed the form of a platinum weave pattern. Somehow, it knew what would go with the outfit. Copkind was waiting in the foyer, lounging on the sofa in a pair of gray pleated Dockers, a loose-knit cotton sweater that reminded Sarah of Schmendrick. The color. His eyes went saucer-wide as she emerged and he whistled. Sarah smiled at him.
Don't get any ideas. This is strictly police work.
She didn't believe it herself. Copkind was refreshingly simple after the self-styled Romeos of the 19th, and the usual grade of overfed, oversexed egomaniacs who hit on her. Yoshi came through the beaded curtain snarling and yawning.
Copkind reached down and scratched the cat's neck. Yoshi, guard the shop. They left through the front door, which Copkind locked with two different keys. My car's in the Bleecker Street garage, two blocks up. Wanna walk? Sure. His hand naturally found hers as they walked up the street, taking in the show. At the garage, Copkind slipped the kid a fin and they waited on the street. It must cost a fortune to store your car here, Sarah said. Not so bad. I did a favor for the owner once, and he charges me a really low rate. What sort of favor? Well, you may not believe this, but one night as I was delivering a sword, two punks tried to stick him up. I just sort of crept up on them by accident. I had no idea what was happening until I was like 10 feet away. Then it all hit me at once. They were holding this guy up, and in one second they were going to see me? I didn't think, I didn't hesitate, I drew the sword and just happened to catch this guy's gun. It was like some kind of $20 special cause it fell to the ground and fell apart. It was almost comical, these two guys standing there looking at the broken gun, so I figured what the hell, I brandished the sword like a berserker and started screaming in Japanese. They took off. Sarah regarded the sword polisher with new respect. You speak Japanese? At that moment, his car arrived, an elderly steel gray Acura Legend in excellent condition. Copkind held the door for her. The interior smelled of leather. It was only after Copkind got behind the wheel and they took off that she became aware of his scent, a haunting, exotic musk. Sarah approved. She couldn't abide men who slathered themselves with cologne like suntan lotion. Copkind took the Manhattan Bridge and worked his way toward the Long Island Expressway, Nancy Wilson singing on the stereo. That's some bracelet, he said as they slowed to a crawl by Hicksville. Where'd you get it? Sarah held the hand up, modeling the Witchblade in its latest incarnation. Some thrift store. Baroque, huh? I think it's Spanish. Luckily the Witchblade seemed to have a talent for camouflage, otherwise she would have a lot more explaining to do. 90 minutes later, Copkind took the Bridgehampton exit and headed toward the beach. Copkind pointed at an imposing stone gate. That's Alec Baldwin's house. Didn't he move to France? Sarah questioned, provoking a smile from David. Braddon's place was a Bauhaus-inspired party palace, lit from within like a Chinese lantern. It was a two-story white box with rectangular and round windows and aluminum decks, suggesting a cruise ship. Gray and crimson-jacketed valets moved in smooth precision to handle the influx of luxury automobiles. A valet held the door for Sarah while another waited to slide into the driver's seat. The moment they were out, the Acura rocketed ahead and ducked into a cubbyhole between an Audi TT and a Rolls-Royce. Cameo bopped from numerous speakers as Copkind and Sarah mounted the broad white marble steps to the front door, where a smiling personal assistant in buzzcut and granny glasses checked for invitations. Inside, the broad foyer gave way to an immense sunken living room, open to the deck and the sea in the distance. The living room was filled with brightly dressed party people, snagging champagne off circulating trays. The room was decorated with African and Japanese art, brooding mahogany masks and featherlight brush paintings, paintings of players and NBA greats. Several NBA greats were in attendance, including Braddon himself, a handsome 6'9" son at the center of a swirling constellation of guests. Upon spotting Copkind, he flashed his brilliant choppers. David. David. He came forward, hands extended, until he made contact. Sarah paused two steps above the living room floor and still found herself looking up at Braddon. And who is this beautiful woman? Where you been hiding her? You been holding out on me? This is Sarah Pezzini, James. She's a New York City detective, so watch your step. Braddon assumed a face of mock horror. You're a cop? Don't worry. I'm off duty. Well, okay then. Didn't know they made cops like you. Surprised there's any crime. You collect swords, Mr. Braddon? Call me James. Yes, I do. And like every other sword collector worth a damn, I get mine polished at Copkind's. Would you show me your most valuable sword, James? Braddon's eyebrows made twin peaks. He held out his arm. I'm gonna borrow your date, David. Copkind winked. Okay, but don't try that NBA hustle on her. She's a cop. I see some friends of mine. He headed down the steps and across the crowded floor. Sarah accompanied Braddon across the floor, past a freestanding pit fireplace, up some redwood stairs, down a hall to a room Braddon unlocked by punching some buttons. Inside, a large hall was illuminated by offset lighting and spotlights shining on specific exhibits. A number of swords were on display inside hinged glass cases. Sarah noted the video cam hidden in a ceiling fixture with approval. Braden led the way to the central glass case and indicated a katana, a full-length war sword, resting in a hand-cut teak base. "That's my Masamune. Paid 2.5 mil for that sucker, and it was a bargain." Masamune was a sword maker? One of the best. Lived in the 1300s. Have you heard of a sword maker named Muramasa? Of course. All serious collectors know about Muramasa. He was Masamune's rival. They held a competition to see who could craft the sharpest blade. Masamune stuck his sword in a stream and allowed a single maple leaf to drift against it. Cut the leaf in two. But Muramasa's blade was so keen, the leaves could sense its fearsome edge and swerve to avoid it. Are Muramasa's blades valuable? Does Oscar Robertson know basketball? Thing about Muramasa's blades, they got a reputation for evil, so many people died from them. Also, experts disagree on whether the first Muramasa, to my mind the one and only, actually existed. So it's damn hard to find an authentic first generation. But that doesn't stop people from collecting them? Hell no. Some collectors even favor that sort of thing. Like my man Hecht. Hecht got me into this Japanese worship in the first place. Gimme a Masamune Tanto to celebrate our first NBA championship. That would be Adrian Hecht, the team's owner. He's here. I'll introduce you. I'll introduce myself. Boomed a voice from the doorway.